It's kidding season. You're finally seeing the fruits of the labor you put in those months ago when planning your breeding program. But now the barn is overflowing. Join Cameron and me in episode 20 of Goat Gab as we discuss killer marketing ideas that can help buyers find you.
All right, welcome back, Goat Gabbers, for another exciting episode of Goat Gab. I'm Cameron.
And I'm Laura.
And today
we're freezing.
Oh, yes, I'm freezing too. Today we're talking about marketing those kids, and I think we might talk a little bit about how freaking cold it is.
Oh my gosh. You know, if I wanted to live in Alaska, well, actually, this is the time to be in Alaska because I looked it up the other day. It is warmer in Anchorage than it is in Dawn, Missouri. And I think it's probably warmer in Anchorage than it is where you are, Cameron.
I would agree with that as well. I looked at my phone today and it said negative zero. I don't know what negative zero is, but I'm pretty sure it's cold.
It's pretty freaking cold.
It's pretty freaking cold. Yeah, it's been an interesting week, just kidding and whatnot, and being able to kind of deal with cold weather kidding. I don't ever remember it being this cold during the last polar vortex, if we're in a polar vortex, in 2019. But I think it might have been this cold, but it didn't feel that cold. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. And I do think it was this cold, but not for like 10 days straight where it didn't get above freezing for all that time. And, you know, I think here Monday night, it's supposed to be like a negative 15. Jeez. And I'm not talking wind chill. I'm talking the real temp. So that's horrible.
Like that is a big concern when it comes to raising livestock as well. Frankly, those who raise livestock, it's not for the faint of heart, I will say.
No, not at all. I don't know how many of my neighbors have posted pictures of bringing calves inside their laundry room because, you know, it's just so cold. You know, mama cow drops that calf and it about freezes to the ground. So
yeah,
not just goats, everybody's cold.
Yeah, it is cold, and I posted something on Facebook here on my personal page the other day, and it was like, I can't wait for 35-degree weather. And I was like, yes, I could never agree with this more than today.
For sure.
So, but it's coming.
You know, I never thought that seeing 20 degrees on the forecast would make me smile, but I think we're going to hit that Wednesday, so... You know, maybe that'll be okay. How are your kids doing with all this cold, Cameron? Are you making it okay?
I mean, it's an interesting kidding season. I'll say that. It's definitely different. Not only because it's so cold. I don't think we've ever kidded in such cold weather before. I mean, my January kids kidded, and it was like 20 degrees out. I mean, that's warm compared to what we're dealing with today here, and it feels like negative 20 outside. So. It's definitely different. It's definitely challenging. But we've had just some ups and downs like all kidding season does. You know, I did put a comment here yesterday and when we were doing our formatting here, and I said all the bucks, but we've had some more does today. So it's kind of evened out the numbers there and made me a little more happy. So it's just been a challenging week. But I've mostly been away from the farm and been watching it from afar due to my job and whatnot. So
is that hard?
Yeah, it's been super hard because, you know, I want to be here. Unfortunately, my dad, fortunately, my dad's been around and whatnot. He's got 42 vacation days that he's got to use up. So he's been using those, thankfully, there. So watching the goats and whatnot there, making sure they're kidding all right. But it's been hard to be a week away from the farm.
Well, yeah, for sure. And, you know, as envious as I am of cute baby goat kisses that I see people posting on the internet, I am so glad I don't have any baby goats right now. I'm like, just keep them in there, girls. Keep your little heaters running. Wait until wait until the 1st of March, and then we'll get some babies on the ground then. So
yes, I would be, I'm very envious of those people who decided to not breed their goats until like October. So
yeah, well, it wasn't a conscious decision. My does just didn't come into heat, but you know, maybe they knew something back then that I didn't know. So this is okay. Yeah. Have you noticed a lot of people have been saying they've had buck years this year?
Yes, I have. And some of my buyers have reached out to me saying, oh, we're having a buck year or oh, we're having a doe year. And I'm like, God, I just wish I was, you know, I just wish I was having one or the other, you know, just something like that. But I'm right in the middle and I'm very thankful for that. But it does mean that we do have to make more of a sample size to make some decisions as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You like those doe years, but then those are really hard too. Yeah.
I think back to our last doe year we had, which was in 2019, the last year, real year of showing heavily, and we kept like 20 doe kids. So sometimes it's good to have those non-doe years because you keep less kids and it makes you make more targeted decisions.
For sure. I agree with that. We had a very strong doe year last year. And one thing that I noticed kind of at the end of the year is we had way more doe kids than what we really had planned to keep. So had some August and September sales that worked out really well, I think, for both of us. You know, it gave me a little more time to see how those does matured out. And for these buyers that had, you know, for whatever reason, didn't buy earlier in the year, they got some really nice animals that were not, I mean, they were in the keeper pen for a long time, you know, so I'll be eager to see how they turn out for them next year. And they were all kind of newer to dairy goats or newer to alpines. So it'll be fun to see them mature and see how they do for them in their new herds.
Yeah, that's a really advantageous opportunity for buyers. If you can find people that are selling off right before kind of the winter season there, and maybe you can, you know, steal some kids from the keeper pen there. But thinking about that, Laura, how are things on your farm?
Well, aside from cold, which it 2 degrees or -2 this evening and my heated hose worked. So, you know, we're really going to put that sucker through its paces this week, I think.
Yeah, heated hose is working overtime there.
It is, but you know, hallelujah for it. It's that I would rather not slosh water down the hill because, you know, sloshing water makes ice, which makes Laura fall, which is just not good. So doesn't work very well.
I actually went looking for a heated hose today at my four tractor supply stores I stopped at. So none of them had it.
Yeah, I think the only place you can get them is Amazon. I really think that's it. But if you can get it now, like I noticed right after I bought mine, they were out of stock again. So I think it's hard to get hold of them. But I had just the best time yesterday. I was very fortunate to get to be part of the Minnesota Goat Ladies Luncheon. And it was just a delightful, just shy of 2 hour interlude in my afternoon, and met some with some really amazing goat people from Minnesota and West Virginia and Iowa and ladies that usually get together in person and have a luncheon and a white elephant thing. And of course, you know, COVID. So we didn't get to do it together, but we did get to meet virtually by Zoom. And Melissa O'Rourke did a really awesome job of organizing things along with Marge Kitchen and Carol Dronan. And oh gosh, it was just a lot of fun. I feel like I made some new friends and really enjoyed the time. So a great shout out to those Minnesota goat ladies. They were talking about their Bluff County show that they have in September. And I think I've mentioned before, that's on my bucket list to go to. So planning to do that. I think they said September 18th and 19th. So I've already got it on my calendar. If God willing, I'll be at that show. I sure hope to be able to.
If you haven't been to that show, I will say I've judged it twice now, and I'm very fortunate to say I've judged it twice. It's an incredible show. Lots of fun, lots of very good competition as well, and they do a tremendous dinner afterwards as well. I've had fantastic steaks there, fantastic meals as well here. Just a fantastic group. So if you're a judge and you're listening, and you have the opportunity, I highly encourage that opportunity to go out and judge that. And if you're an exhibitor, go out and show there as well, because that is a great time with tremendous competition.
Do they show fuzzy?
You can show fuzzy, and I've judged goats there that have shown fuzzy. So, because of the date, it's, you know, later, it's middle of September. You can show fuzzy, and judges really don't have a problem with it.
Okay. I just wondered, I probably wouldn't want to do much clipping that late in the year. Sometimes September is nice, but you know, I just, good to know. As I said, it's on my list for this year. So
a lot of those people have already clipped for the Minnesota State Fair. That's like Labor Day. So because of that, their goats are like freshly clipped for that Minnesota Goat Ladies show.
So is that usually the last show of the year then for them?
Yep, that's the last show there.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. Well, the only other thing we did, it was one of those, the things you do just because you got to get it done. I had a straggler doe that this was kind of my last ditch effort to see if she was pregnant or not. And, you know, I don't know how well ultrasounds work in 0 degrees outside, but we fired that puppy up in my kitchen and had a 3-year-old goat standing in my kitchen getting ultrasounded today. So not something that most people probably would do, but I'm sure that every goat person has done things like that in the past that, you know, it's abnormal, but hey, that's our life. So
some people call it abnormal. I call it normal.
We'll just delude ourselves in thinking that we're normal. Okay.
Yeah.
So big ADGA news this week, the national show schedule came out.
Woo, yay.
You know, when the rules came out, I thought, oh my gosh, it looks like we might be getting to do this. And then when the schedule comes out, it's kind of like, yes, we're one more step to probably going to happen. So that was pretty exciting.
Yes, but it's also a little like a gut punch, like, oh my God, I have to figure out XYZ now as a breeder and whatnot as well. And for me specifically, it's taking a hard look at saying, oh my God, all of my breeds show in the upfront portion of the show and I'm not super spread out. Oh my God.
Yeah. How are you going to do that?
So it's interesting. Sables are showing on Sunday night and Monday morning. So that won't be too bad, but Alpines are showing on Monday night and Tuesday morning. Well, Toggenbergs are doing the same, and then recorded grades as well. My fiance Catherine might have one or two recorded grades and some Toggenbergs, and then obviously we have Alpines as well. So we might need some extra manpower there, or we might need a devoted runner to make sure that animals are getting prepped. If they need to take milk out and whatnot. But it's going to be logistics fun. It's going to be logistically fun. I'll say that.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, thank goodness they give you plenty of time to kind of plan for it. But, you know, I know you. You're probably like me that, yeah, you can delegate to somebody else, but you kind of want to be the one doing it anyway. I mean, it's hard to let those things go. So,
yeah, I have trust issues when it comes to my goats. And then Catherine has even more trust issues when it comes to her goats as well, especially getting ready for, you know, a very intense nationally renowned show. So it'll be interesting. And I think all tog breeders out there that are listening, you know, it's going to be really challenging to be able to utter your goats because you're showing right after recorded grades. And because you're showing right after recorded grades and you have that there, you don't know how long the recorded grade show is going to go. And that'll be very challenging for tog breeders, and it's going to be just very interesting to see how that plays out.
So they didn't give a start time. They just said to follow recorded grade.
Exactly. And wow. Whether that's good, bad, or in between, I think it leads right now into the next topic, and that I think a lot of people are talking about besides the show order is milk out.
Oh, gosh, yes. That, you know, it seems like that is something that comes up every single year about national shows. People are talking about milk outs, and there's all kinds of pros and cons either way, but certainly a different move to say that we're going to do away with it this year. And having volunteered to work at a milk out before, I totally think that is the smartest plan that they could have made concerning COVID and exposure and so forth. There's just no way that you could do any type of tracing or distancing or whatever, having a group of people to do milk check. It's just too much hands-on and too up close.
Yeah, I agree with you on there on COVID procedures and whatnot when it comes to milk check and whatnot. I think it sets a good precedent as well. And I'm going to go against some of what other people say and some of my friends agree on is, you know, I'm in favor of getting rid of the milk check just entirely as well. So
I'll go on the record to say I agree with you. It's not, you know, people get very passionate about this and I understand it because, you know, we all hear those rumors of people that utter up goats for 3 days before they bring them to a local show. To me, I don't see why that it doesn't make sense to me. You know, an animal that's uttered up that much, they look stale or they don't walk well, or their rump structure gets screwed up from having too much milk or what have you. But, you know, you as a breeder, you as an exhibitor, there is an art to knowing at what point your animal looks its best. And so when we see milk outs, I guarantee you, by the time the Alpine 4-year-olds walk in the class, you've got animals that are extremely over-uttered every single year. So milk out doesn't guard against over-uttering.
I agree with that. And I think if you're there at the national show level and you're on the national scale, you as a breeder should know how to utter your goat or have taken steps and precautions in order to understanding how to know to utter your goat as well. This can include like practicing at home or going to a show as well and knowing how much milk they need in order to reach their potential.
Right. Exactly.
So I think we'll probably get into that later on as we get closer to the nationals. I think we're going to do a whole series on the national show. I haven't told Laura that, but in my mind, I think we're going to do a couple episode long things on preparing for the national show.
Oh, Cameron, that's scary. We've been thinking along the same wavelength because I've had a lot of people say, gosh, when we get closer to nationals, will you guys talk about what we need to do to prepare and know what to do? I'm like, yeah, surely. So
we're going to get there, people. But I really think that's going to help people and whatnot. And I think it's really going to be beneficial both for me and Laura to kind of examine our own process as well and thinking about what we do and why we do it.
Oh, for sure. So, Cameron, just a thought. Do you think that this year is going to, when we see how this goes with no milk out, do you think that might mean down the road that they're just going to say, we're not going to do a milk out anymore?
I am hoping for that. Of course, there's been direction from the board that has said to examine milk out and whatnot there. I'm hoping that they would do away with it. Again, you're on that national scale and kind of knowing that. And also one thing as well that, you know, having some committee insight is it's so hard for the national show committee to find volunteers to do that. One thing to also consider, because it's a volunteer position, is you don't want to wear out your volunteers and say you're volunteering 4 out of the 5 days because that makes it exhausting on volunteers and makes them not want to come back as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So
I can see that totally.
I would hope they would go away with it there. One thing I really hope the judges work to understand is that, you know, let's punish these, not punish, but let's say this goat is over uttered and not be afraid to say that goats are over uttered. Because I think at local shows,
let's call them out.
Yeah, let's call them out. Let's call a spade a spade and recognize that goats are over uttered. And I would hope, because the members chose this, that they would vote in member or vote in judges that would call a spade a spade.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that for sure.
So that's one thing. And myself and another person here had a conversation about that today. So yeah, I think it's very interesting.
Well, more to come. Every step that we get closer to a national show and more plans that are being made, it gets me even more excited. Yes. I just can't hardly wait. I'm so excited.
I'm very excited. My Airbnb is already booked for this. So I guess we're going. Question mark?
Well, sounds awesome. I've had my hotel booked for about 3 months now, so.
Yes, and if you're interested in going, I totally recommend booking it early. I'm going to suggest something here. Airbnbs are great because they might have a washer and dryer on site. And if you're showing multiple breeds, you always need to clean those whites.
For sure. We're staying at an extended stay hotel that has a kitchenette and it has laundry and all that too. So
Those are nice.
I just haven't delved into the Airbnb enough to be comfortable with knowing what I'm getting into. So maybe I need to look into that more.
Yeah, we'll get there. So I think knowing that there, any other comments on the national show? I know we had some show order drama on Facebook, but other than that.
Oh, you know, yeah. Do we want to say something about that?
Sure. Let's just call it out.
So it looks like that there are some people in District 2 who have written to the board of directors asking to move the Nigerians, which are the last breed to show, to the front of the national show. I can understand the reasoning with the thought that that breed has the largest number of animals exhibited. So let's move them out if they can leave early. And then, that will even help more, hopefully reduce the number of people there that for COVID reasons. And I get that, I guess. What do you think?
I understand where it's coming from. And I like to think I planted the seed in the minds because of our podcast and what I had said, but I doubt that was it. But I really think, it's a good concern and I understand it, but also you need to look at the history of the Nigerian dwarf breed when it comes to the last couple of years and when they've been towards the beginning of the show. And I totally understand that as well. And I think Deb Mackey, who is kind of the mastermind behind national show planning and whatnot there when it comes to the schedule, and she's put schedules together for years for the national show, she kind of understands the history when it comes to that. And I understand why she did what she did.
Well, and you know, something else that I thought of, I was thinking about this today while I was cleaning up in the kitchen. You know, gotta distract your mind, right?
Yes.
I was thinking about the fact that, you know, yes, this year people can leave if they want to leave early. But if you have more than one breed, like, you know, I have Alpines and then my daughter has a few Sottens that we're really hoping are nice enough to take to the national show. Well, they show last or, you know, at the end of the week. So we're not going to be able to leave early. I don't know how many Nigerian people also show standard breed too, but I would guess that there's a lower percentage of Nigerian breeders that also show another breed. Do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that, just judging some of the shows and whatnot around the nation. So I think you're right.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter to me either way. I mean, I think every breed should have its day of going first or going last. And if they truly have bid first all these times for many years, yeah, it is their turn not to be first, I guess. So
yeah, no, I have no problem with it. But again, it doesn't affect me as well because I'm not a Nigerian dwarf breeder. I was an exhibitor once, not a breeder. So it doesn't.
Oh, really, that's right. You were the premier youth exhibitor for Nigerian dwarfs.
Yes, 2013 premier youth exhibitor. I had to think about it. The chair is actually
there. You go.
The chair is the same size as the normal one, so it's great. It's actually higher than the La Mancha one I sit in at my desk and when I record the podcast. So
that's perfect.
Yes,
that is perfect. All right. Do we want to go on to our main topic today?
Yes,
marketing.
I think that's very important there. And this is something that is near and dear to my heart because I have majored in ag communications in college. I took a lot of marketing classes because this is something that really interested me. And what I'm going to say is a little disclaimer here is these are from my experiences and Laura's experiences and whatnot, whether they're right, wrong, or something in between. These are from our experiences, though.
Yes, for sure.
So, yeah, but I think marketing, what, how, where, why, you know, thinking about what we need to do in order to market our goats. And I've seen already people starting to market their goats because kidding season has arisen.
It has. And if you're like me, the sooner you can get those goats moved out, the easier life is. So, you know, it's always nice to have animals that are pre-reserved. So, you know, let's get them off to a great start. Let's make sure that they're doing fine, and let's get them to their new family so they can enjoy them too.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. But I think also when it comes to being a breeder of goats is you want to make sure that they're healthy when they leave the farm as well. So some breeders might have certain days when it comes to when they can leave the farm. For me, I usually like to wait about 21 days, 3 weeks before they can leave the farm and whatnot. So, but I agree with you on that, Laura.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're shipping, obviously there are some considerations there too. You know, those crates, they only make the crate so big and you can only ship them so big. So if you're doing that, you have to watch that as well. But, you know, I think on our notes here that we have, Cameron, I'm really intrigued with what you started out, the four P's of marketing. So explain a little bit about that, would you?
This is straight from a marketing textbook, as bad as that sounds, but I think it has lots of relevancy when it comes to dairy goats because we don't really think about it. The four P's are the product, which would be the goat, the promotion, which would be how you go out and promote your sale, the place, and the price. And I think I'm going to break them down here into each one here, the product. So the product is obviously the goat, but also you as a farm can have a brand as well. So what you're selling is not just a goat, but a brand as well. Some people may sell animals also with a guarantee that they may win the county fair or first place in local shows and whatnot. You know, I've seen some people market based on that, based on the product that they have. So a little different thing there. I'm going to skip to the place.
You know, I think...
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we do see that, you know, a lot. Sometimes people are marketing their animals and the brand that they're marketing is, I'm going to offer this kid and, hey, she's out of the yellow butterfly herd, or her dam's mm-hmm. out of the yellow butterfly herd. So, you know, they might be using their own brand, but they may also be piggybacking off of somebody else's brand too. So, you know, when you can use those names that people know, oh, that's a well-known herd. That's a well-known name. That definitely, I think, can help you market your product.
I agree on that as well. If you can throw a big name herd out there, or, you know, Dam is a Kickapoo Valley buck, and I'll pick on my herd, for example, or Dam or Buck is a Redwood Hills buck or something like that, and I'll pick on Scott's herd there, because they are big brand names in the industry and have a certain quality associated with them, at least in my mind. So that for is sure. something you can use to promote the product out there. Also,
yeah, definitely.
Next thing there is promotion. So where are you getting your product out in the place? Obviously there's a website. If you have a website for your goats, you can talk face to face with them, Facebook. And then I've also put other social media outlets, because I have seen some goat herds transition to other social media outlets. But one thing I didn't list in our show notes here is Craigslist, actually.
I wondered if you were going to mention that, Cameron. Have you had any experience using Craigslist?
I have like once or twice put like a buck kid on there. I had no success whatsoever, but I have tried it. What about you, Laura?
I put some buck kids on there a few years back and got into a really ugly scammer situation, involved my local sheriff with it. So my caveat with Craigslist is be very, very, very careful. Because people, you know, in this case, this person, I had two different buck kids. They wanted to buy my product, keyword mm-hmm. there, not a kid. I said, which one do you want? Well, I'll let you pick for me. Well, what are you wanting to, you know, what are you wanting to do? And it went on way longer than it should have. My daughters were like, Mom, this is a scammer. Drop it. And, it ended up with this person sending me a large check drawn on, it was a money order from they send it overseas all the time. I don't remember. Oh, wow. And I said, you know what? No, we're not going to do this sale. And it just got ugly. So I would just say, if you're going to use Craigslist, be really careful.
Yeah. I have heard some success stories though. I'll tell this story here. I was in North Carolina and I judged a recorded grade native on appearance doe that was registered and the lady had found on Craigslist. The doe was really, really nice. Like, she was best udder in my show. And she's like, yeah, I bought this goat for $75 off Craigslist. And I was like, wow, that's a steal right there, is what I told the lady. There are some success stories on Craigslist, but like Laura said, I think you just need to be careful.
Yeah. Don't give, you know, really get some personal contact with this person before you give them out your farm, your address, your name, anything like that. Because in this case, stupid me gave them my address, and then my daughters were really worried because they were home by themselves. So it's just be careful with Craigslist.
Yeah. Also on promotion here, I wanted to kind of reflect on the olden days, as I'll call them. You know, we used to do promotion, and you can continue to do promotion through print media. So back when the UCN, when that was a thing, it just was here in December. The UCN, the Dairy Goat Journal, some people have chosen to advertise in, the directory, the AGA directory. They just opened that a couple years ago to direct advertisements. So, there are opportunities for traditional print media promotion as well, but there are lots of different avenues on the digital side as well.
You know, speaking of that, and I know that we've talked about this before, the old sales lists that people used to put together, like a little printed catalog of the animals that they had in their herd and had some, you know, pictures and show wins and would tell you who they're bred to and kind of describe the animals. And it was always exciting about this time of year or a little before that when you'd start getting those rolling in and you could start thinking about what you want to purchase or what you'd love to have if you could. I think that Craig Copeman at Pleasant Grove does a really neat idea of blending that old sales list type promotion with today's technology. He produces a sales list in PDF format and you just download it. And it is so much fun to get that and print it off or look at it on your computer and, you know, really look at what he has. It's kind of a nice modern take on the old sales list. And I really appreciate that. I think that's pretty cool.
I was just actually going to bring Craig up actually. And I know he probably doesn't listen because he's old school, but definitely a great take on that there. And if Craig does listen, I'm sorry for calling you old school.
Hats off to you, Craig. You do a good job.
Yes. Yes. The old school sales list is very nostalgic, as the kids would say, when it comes to a promotion tactic there. But lots of different things here. But Laura, where do you see the most promotion, kind of taking off in the goat world?
Facebook. I mean, and people complain and gripe and stuff about Facebook, but that's where I see most of the promotion. It's so quick. It's instantaneous. You have a doe that just goes best in show, snap a pic, and you can have it on Facebook in 10 minutes. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. It's just so quick and easy. That's what I think. What do you think?
I agree. Facebook, the Facebook, as I've said before, the Facebook is kind of the place for dairy goat people to kind of unite and see the wins and the lows and sympathize and congratulate on achievements and whatnot there. So Facebook is the best way to promote your herd, at least currently right now. That may change in the future, but the Facebook is where people are seeing your goats. And it's not just, making sure you're on Facebook, but it's making sure that wherever you promote your goats on Facebook is the right place to promote them. So I'll give you an example here. I might not post in the District 7 ADGA group about my wins here in Iowa, because that's probably not the right place to promote my wins, because no one cares about my goats in Iowa.
Yeah, I can totally see that for sure.
Or think about it in terms of breeds here. I might not say this Alpine was best doe in show and then go share it to a La Mancha page.
No, because they don't probably care too much.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think with Facebook, there's a whole different opportunity for promotion and really being able to target your promotion to different groups of people that might care more or might be more interested in your product.
Right. And something else, too, that I think you have to keep in mind with Facebook, they've really slammed down on animal sales. So while you can promote your herd and really develop your branding or your message on Facebook, if you say, hey, I've got this beautiful buck kid for $500, you can buy him. They're probably going to flag that and you won't get it posted. So you need to be creative and careful about directing people maybe to your website or direct them to getting more information from you, but not directly selling on Facebook.
When I reflect back to some of my marketing classes, social media was originally designed to get people to go to your website and go and buy from your website there. I think we've kind of shifted in the dairy goat world. Instead of looking at websites, we go right to Facebook.
There are a lot of people who have dropped their website, which I find sad.
Yeah,
and
I
have
agree.
Just strictly gone to Facebook. And to me, the problem with doing that is you lose a lot of the archive ability of your website. It's hard to go back and look at things that you might want to see through Facebook versus looking on a website. You can make a previous animal page or kind of archive your information a little easier, I think, on a website.
I agree. There are ways there. And I remember when I redid Catherine's website here like a year or two ago, I actually went and you can like hide pages as well from a lot of like Wix or Weebly's. And I think those are like the main two that go people use when it comes to websites. You can actually hide pages and hide things and whatnot. So the general public can't see them. Like, for example, if you search, if you look at my website, you can't find anything about La Manchas. However, if you search Kickapoo Valley Dairy Goats La Manchas, you can find my page. You can find my La Manchas from then. But you can hide them just from your general page, so general people can't see them. But if you're specifically targeting them, you can go see me promoting the La Manchas on my page. But you can hide them.
Well, that's cool. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, I think that's along the lines of promotion there. But I think place, going to the next one, place is a really big thing to consider. You obviously, and we'll take that D7 example back there, you might not want to be promoting goats in Missouri or Illinois to D7 because that's simply not the best place to promote them.
Right. It would be hard to get them there, and you're probably going to spending time that could be well spent, maybe focusing on D4, D5, D3, where people are a little bit closer.
Yeah, I think place is something that is vastly overlooked when it comes to marketing of goats, because it's so hard. And I'll have people, and I reflect back to a couple weeks ago when somebody contacted me from California and they wanted me to ship a goat, and I was like, I just really don't want to do that. It's so hard to get goats to the West Coast in D8 or District 7 as well. There, you have to put them on a transport. They have to come or they have to physically drive to the farm. It's just so hard there. So you really, when you're thinking about marketing your animals, you need to make sure you're taking a place into consideration.
For sure. And also, I know on Facebook, and I'm sure that they have these in every state, but Missouri has probably 10 to 15 different goat groups in Missouri. And they run the gamut from registered show stock to horned fence row type goats. I mean, and they all have their place. I'm not being a goat snob here, but you kind of have to think about where you're marketing. If you have animals that you're trying to sell for $500-$600, probably the one where most of the goats are horned scrub animals, that's not the place that you want to be marketing those animals.
Yeah, you're exactly right there. Laura, anything else on place?
Nope, I think that does it.
All right. I think price is very interesting because I think you can almost price yourself out of a certain market as well. What are your thoughts on price, Laura?
I think it's hard to price animals. I really do. You know, you can look at other people's websites and the quality of animals that they have and think, well, I could probably say that my animal's that quality, but there's so much that goes into knowing what your market is and, you know, should we be able to get a lot more money for a sound milking doe than what we do a promising kid? Yes. Is the reality that sometimes you can't? Yes. So I think it's hard to price. So how do you come up with your price points, Cameron?
It's different. It really just depends on the customer and whatnot. And I always try to make sure when I'm asking, kind of fielding when I'm fielding questions about animals is what's your price point? Because there's a different price point for 4-H'ers versus people who are starting out versus experienced breeders. And you know, I hate to say, oh, Laura, because you're an experienced breeder, you're going to get a different price point. But the fact of the matter is, you know, my herd has always given a 4-H discount. So if a 4-H'er came to my herd and said, hey, I want a buck kid out of a finished champion doe, I would say, okay, that's fine. You know, that's $550. Well, Laura, if you came to my herd, that's $600 because you're not a 4-H'er.
Sure. Right. But then there's the flip side of that too. Sometimes I think when you sell animals, if you know that this animal is going to a herd that's going to promote that animal because you've seen them do that for other animals, that it does linear appraisal and milk test and shows and will really give your animal a chance to shine, maybe that's an animal that you could want to consider giving them a price break on.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that as well. And, you know, I do see some people that say discount to LA DHIR, you know, show homes, you know, and I do appreciate that. And I think that's a great marketing ploy but great marketing tactic as well. But I really like, and I think it's the Johannes Acres Purple Thistle West Ahove herd. They, I don't know if they have it on their website or if they just talk to people about it, but they have a specific breakdown of all of their pricing increases and justify why each price is each price. And it's based on LA score and milking ability and times at national show, permanent champion, whether they have their G. It's a very interesting price breakdown and really does a good job of explaining that.
That's interesting. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah. It's very interesting. And, you know, Catherine has bought some goats from them before. And it's true to that. We've looked at buying goats from them as well. So it's a very interesting price breakdown when it comes to that as well. So really, but I think when it comes to prices, you can almost price yourself out of a market too, because if your evaluation of animals does not meet the price of what your buyers are expecting, they're not going to come to you.
No, totally true. I agree with that.
And as a seller of goats, I've had that as well, where we've overpriced animals. You know, maybe we've said, you know, $550 is the price and whatnot. And eventually we've had to work ourselves down to $400 just to get the animal moved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've done that too.
So,
and it's unfortunate sometimes, but then you have to step back and think, okay, you know, it comes to a point where if it's a choice between me having too many animals to take care of and me ending up with this animal at the sale barn, or getting it to a good home, but not getting the price for it that I wanted, I'll probably choose the latter on that.
Mm-hmm. But I will think as well, when it comes to those mature animals, you can take some of those to the sale barn and get very good prices. I think about somebody south of me and somebody north of me, you know, they can get almost $200 for their cull milkers or does that won't breed and whatnot, you know, as compared to other people. So, you know, saying you want a $150 nanny, you might be shooting yourself in the foot saying that's not going to happen because I can take them to the, you know, to the sale barn and get more.
Right. And I think everybody who's selling goats needs to keep that in mind too, because, you know, there are times where I've had, does that didn't meet my standards and I thought she's going to make a nice little family milker. Gosh, people want to pay $50 for them. And I'm thinking, no, I could get more than that just for meat on the hoof at the sale barn. So no, you're not going to get a milking doe for $50. So
yeah, That's you're exactly right there. So just some things to consider. And those are the four P's of marketing when it comes to a textbook. And I think when it comes to goats, I think we really need to consider that as well.
I agree. Those are good points to keep in mind.
Yeah, actually there. Next thing I'd like to talk about is just marketing just doesn't stop because there's nothing to sell. And I think this really goes to a lot of social media presence. I think of like Sarah Cohen Wahlberg in Minnesota, who does a great job of marketing throughout the entire year, either posting pictures or engaging with certain pedigrees or really does the cute stuff when it comes to Facebook for each specific holiday.
Oh gosh, those pictures of baby Nubians with like for Valentine's Day or the pictures that she's done with those baby goats. I don't know how she gets them to pose. Maybe it's a Nubian thing versus Alpines because Alpines, I don't know, jump more. Maybe not, but her baby goats are just so perfect and so cute. That really gets people to look at your herd and think, oh, I want one of those.
Yeah, for you're sure. Exactly right there. And it goes to, and it speaks to Sarah's strength of her brand when she posts things like that and does, you know, kind of just says, hey, look at Blussberry because we post cute pictures. So like me. And that might translate to more sales later. So when it comes to her overall brand, she's known as, you know, the people that post, you know, cute pictures on Facebook of each holiday.
Right. For sure.
And I think going back to Grace Toy as well, when, you know, shout out to the Ringside American Dairy Goat podcast there. They had Grace Toy on a couple weeks ago. She does a great job of promoting her goats on social media when it comes to TikTok as well. So she does a great job of that and kind of shows off her brand as well and might be engaging people of different audiences that might not have ever considered buying a goat.
Did she say that TikTok she did with her buck called Michael Scott got like a million views or something? It was just unreal. I couldn't believe how many people looked at that TikTok. That just blows my mind.
Yeah, for sure. Just because, and I think it goes back to the point, it's just because there's nothing to sell. You know, it doesn't matter that there's something to sell. The fact of the matter is people are always looking, and that might catch their eye in the future when they're actually looking to buy something.
Yes. And I think too, Cameron, that what fits in with that, marketing doesn't stop just because there's nothing to sell. Marketing is also kind of what you do all the time when you're in the public eye. So not just on Facebook, but I think about like, you know, when you're in 4-H or maybe you're at your state fair, oftentimes they have herdsman awards and part of what gives you that award is being kind to people and friendly and explaining things and having that open, come talk to me. I'm here to educate. I'm here to talk about my animals. I'd love to show you what we do. Boy, that's marketing too. And so when people see your clean pens and your animals that have clean, fresh water and fresh hay and, you know, a nice display, it doesn't have to be over the top, but something that's, you know, clean and brands your animals, that does a lot of marketing for you too.
And I think that goes deeper into, you know, what is your personal brand as well? And we haven't really talked about that, but I think if you can show other people that you're working hard, that you are, you know, that you're taking care of your animals. I think about, you know, Leslie Sidwell of the Iron Rod Herd. She is always pampering her goats when it comes to that at the national show, always up on the stand, eating feed and whatnot there. And that puts a positive message on that she really cares for her goats and really takes, you know, dairy goat care and husbandry very seriously there.
One of the first national shows that I went to after I got back in goats the second time, Leslie was there, and of course I'd heard of Iron Rod Animals forever and wanted to go see her animals. And, you know, the thing that really struck me about Leslie was as she was working with her goats, she would talk to anybody that came up. And, you know, just, it didn't matter if you were a national show person or if you were just, some new back into goats person with three little girls in tow. She was friendly and kind and talked and made you want to do business with her. And I think that a good attitude and a smile on your face and not getting mad when things go wrong or throwing a hissy fit in the ring when you don't win. That all is part of marketing too. People are going to want to work with people that are pleasant.
Yes, I agree on that. And it's all about putting a positive image out there of not only your goats, but of yourself. Because at the end of the day, people buy goats from people too. It's not just the goats they look at. They buy goats from people.
Yes. If you're nasty, they're not going to want to buy goats from you. Just putting it out there.
Yeah. Unless they have a nice goat, then I might be interested.
Well, but you're probably, but you know, okay. So let's go with that, Cameron.
Ooh.
Yeah, you might still be interested, but are you going to spend the time after you buy that animal, sending them pictures, giving them feedback, letting them know how pleased you are with that animal? No, you're probably going to buy that animal, finish it, leave it at home in the barn and show its offspring and, you know, move on. It's not going to be a partnership or a relationship with the person that you buy from. And I know that for me personally, I like to have relationships with animals that I, or excuse me, with people that I sell animals to. You know, it's not just about getting my animals in the right homes. It's about developing those relationships. And I think that's an important part of marketing.
No, I agree with you on that there. I was thinking more along the lines of bringing in a buck and thinking, okay, I can deal with one, you know, one rotten egg if it brings in a certain genetic line that I really want. You know, I tend to have a thicker skin and whatnot personally, so not a lot of things bother me, but that's just, I don't see that as a positive. I think of what piece can I add to my herd to better my herd, but I do agree with you on that, Laura.
Well, and, you know, you've done this long enough that yeah, you can do that a little bit more too, but I guess I'm just thinking, you're going to always catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. So be a honey.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I agree there. But I think the biggest thing is when it comes to marketing and whatnot and thinking about it doesn't stop is when it comes to show season. And I think people are, you know, when you think about your first goat show, people are dying to see, maybe not dying, but people are dying to see pictures of your goats.
Right. Oh, for sure.
That first
and we've talked about how hard it is to get those pictures.
Yes, but that first goat show, when you get those first pictures on Facebook, maybe it's a new finished goat, maybe it's a yearling that placed well, maybe it's just anything. It doesn't even have to have a rosette. People are like, the winter has broken. Facebook pictures of goats are coming back and they're looking good and it's so exciting.
Oh yes, for sure. Yep. I agree with that.
I think, you know, when I think about when it comes to promoting your brand positively and whatnot, there's not only those, but I think one other good thing is pictures of with ribbons and happy faces. You know, I think just showing off success does really good when it shows a positive brand image.
Yes, I agree with that as well.
I think about dashboard ribbon pics. I've been guilty of doing those when it comes, you know, four ring shows and maybe Catherine and I have been there and we have, you know, four different breeds and whatnot. So we have a cornucopia of ribbons, but people really gravitate towards those. They gravitate towards just you showing off your goats.
They do. And, you know, it's not, I think sometimes people are worried that it's going to be looked at as being braggy or whatever. But when you've worked to develop that relationship with people that are following your page, they're kind of cheering for you too, you know.
And I think that's what they want.
They want to see you succeed.
And I think that's really great about the Dairy Goat community is you feel like you can have a connection on social media with some random person you've never met from Montana. Just because of the relationship you've created with your Facebook followers.
Yeah. Yes.
And
I agree
on the flip side is there, you know, you can celebrate the high of highs, but also they can help cheer you up in the low of lows as well.
Oh yes. And I think, you know, I remember when, we lost my herd matriarch about a year ago. That was a low of lows for me. But, you know, it was a doe that I had highlighted over the years, over the 12 years that I had her. And, you know, it was good to see that people understood. And also, you know, shows you do care for your animals. And any of us that have livestock know that there are those great highs and then there are those really deep lows. And sometimes it's good to have somebody say, yep, I've been there. I know what it's like to get through that. So that can show people that you're human too. You're not just, mm-hmm. you're not just a all sunlight and flowers all the time, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's important to show the human side of things as well. And I think it's something, as I've grown up, I was like, oh, let's only show the happy. Let's only show the happy. But that's not real life. You know, it's not just sunshine and roses. And like you said, I mean, it's, you know, if you have livestock, you have dead stock. And that's a very morbid thing for me to, yeah, that's a very morbid thing for me to say, but it's the truth, unfortunately.
It is, so, unfortunately. And yes. We all know that. So it's good to show that we're all human too.
Yes. So. You know, bringing back us up to a high now, after we were in a low of low, but one thing also to showcase is breeding season. I think people can get really excited about breedings, especially if they're very entrenched in your brand or really appreciate some stuff. So I really think highlighting some stuff during breeding season is really good to know that marketing doesn't stop.
Well, and one thing that Cameron, that you guys do that I always have enjoyed for many years is you really highlight your cool AI breedings that you're doing. you know, sometimes you'll say, oh, we're really excited about this AI breeding, but we're not going to tell you yet. And I'm like, oh, who are they using? What semen do they have hidden that I don't know about? And, you know, what's their next great, you know, breeding that they're going to make. But it's always fun when, you know, you talk about, we're using this vintage buck, or we've brought this one back, or, oh yes, you thought you saw the last of Saga, but guess what? We're going to have Saga babies again. You know, it's always fun to see that. So I really appreciate it when people talk about their breeding programs.
I've done some interesting stuff in the past, and maybe because I'm a social media nerd and I'm a millennial, or I find this stuff really interesting, is I've done some certain campaigns around this where I think I did a thing on when I was announcing like our breeding list, where it was the wedding, what is it, the wedding saying something old, something new, something blue. I think I've done that before.
Yeah.
I've done that before, and that was interesting. I also did and I know Holly Broker from the Ho and Boo Herd does this, is the 12 days or does of Christmas, as well, to kind of showcase some of our stuff to some of our newer users or newer followers as well. So just some interesting, you know, things you can do in the off season to engage your customers, either it's with a specific holiday or something funny or something, just something interesting, just to get people excited about stuff.
Right. And it does, you know, when people know, oh, it's Monday, so-and-so is going to put a new animal up for me to take a look at and drool mm-hmm. over or whatever. It kind of makes it fun for you. And I think it makes it fun for the readers too.
I agree. There used to be like, I think it was like Sawn and Sunday, Sable Sunday. I don't know what was, I don't think there was anything Monday. There was Tog Tuesday.
Yeah.
Tog Tuesday was a thing. I know they did like a way back Wednesday.
Was it a Mancha Monday? Did they do
Mancha Monday? Mancha Monday. But then Friday, always my favorite day, was French Alpine Friday.
Right. But then I think some of the American Alpine breeders are like, well, we want to be on here too.
Yeah.
Like, sure. Of course. Why not? But
I also think about Kurt Schnipke. He's one of our listeners and a good friend of mine. He does, what is it, October? He does an Oberhasli special when it comes to October. And that's very interesting as well.
Oh, cool idea. That's a lot of fun.
Yes, it is. And it's fun to see just kind of people be creative with their goats and whatnot and really engage their audience.
You know, speaking of that, we already mentioned Craig Copeman once. He's going to get another one from us. He's done a really good job of promoting I think it was a doe a day. Did he do that through the month of January?
Yeah. December, January, something like that.
Yeah. And so every morning when I would be getting up and brushing my teeth, I'd pop open Facebook to see who he put up. And a lot of it behind that, they were beautiful pictures. how on a non-show year he got all these gorgeous pictures of these does, but always you could tell he put a lot of planning into it. You know, he either highlighted certain families of does or, you know, had their information that people would want to know. And it was just a well thought out campaign. I thought he did a really neat job with that.
Yeah. I think it just goes to show that just because it's not show season or it's not breeding season or it's not kidding season, just because there's no season involved with it, marketing just doesn't stop. You need to be able to not only tell yourself tell your story on Facebook, but in person as well. And promoting yourself across the entire year cycle.
Right, for sure. So, you know, looking directly at Facebook, I think I mentioned before, some people have dropped their own website and just have a farm page. I know I have a farm page. And I also have a website, but I kind of did a farm page because, frankly, I've got a lot of non-goat people in my life too. And I'm trying to keep my goat stuff more on the farm page and not inundating my aunts and uncles with pictures of goat behinds all the time, because, you know, they don't necessarily appreciate that like I think they should. So
I agree.
You know, having a separate farm page is a cool way to pull people in. They can search for your farm name and find you pretty easily that way.
I agree with that. And that was something that, you know, kind of growing up, and I'll tell a little bit of a personal story here and I'll try not to get emotional. I got bullied a lot in high school for promoting my goats on my farm page. And that was something that I just had to learn to deal with and kind of struggle through a little bit. So that's why the farm page was born out of that, was not promoting it personally on my page, but that there, it's something I've kind of grown out of and learned to lean into and accept that I'm just in love with goats and I'm not afraid to tell anybody. But that's kind of where the farm page came in there. And now if you look at my personal Facebook page, it's kind of a blend of personal stuff and farm stuff here. And it's what a lot of my ag friends would appreciate now instead of just what's on the farm page.
Right. But I think that's a good thing to keep in mind too. Some people who aren't in goats don't necessarily appreciate it. So
yeah,
that's a good way to do that. So
yeah. Yeah. And I think the farm page, when it comes to owning a specific brand, is very important because anonymous people can like it. It's not like you're accepting a friend request or you're filtering through people to kind of see your content. It's just an anonymous go ahead and like. And what I've noticed on my personal farm page is I have lots of people from overseas that like it.
Right. But maybe you might not want them to like your own personal page. And, and you know, that's something that if I had, you know, small children, I probably would think really hard about that. I'm pretty lenient on who I accept as friends, but back when I had little kids, I wasn't, because you know, you hate to think about, sex trafficking and people who have, a bad thought behind them in finding you. But if you've got little kids, you may want to keep your farm life separate from that, just for that reason, to kind of protect your family.
Exactly. You're exactly right there. So a farm page is a great way to do that. Again, it should be only focused on goat content, or if you have soaps or make cheeses, I think about the Nobles down in Noble Springs. You know, they do a lot of promotional events there and promote that on their farm page. They do some stuff with Facebook and Instagram stories as well, and then do some TikToks. So they do a great job of just representing their brand on their farm page. But I think it also goes back to knowing what your brand is and making sure it's focused on that.
Yeah, I would agree with that too.
Yeah, so that's the first thing there. The next thing I had listed in our show notes here is group page, where you can create a group centered around your farm. I don't think a lot of people do this these days, but some people have, and it's just kind of a weird thing.
So I don't guess I know how to do that. So is it kind of like a group messenger thing where you invite people to be part of something, or
kind of? Yeah. Yeah. And you could, it just shows up in your Facebook groups and it's like, you know, friends of Kickapoo Valley Dairy Goats.
Okay.
And, you know, obviously they get a notification every time, excuse me, they put you post in that page. So It's a very, when you think about it in terms of direct notification, you don't have to worry about, you know, not everyone seeing that, because they do get a direct notification unless it's turned off from their settings. But it's interesting. I don't see a lot of them these days, though.
No, but, you know, on that note, like, we have a Missouri Dairy Goat Association group.
Yep.
There's AGDA district groups. There's a French Alpine group. Those are great places you can market to as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a niche market, and promote what you've got there. Sure.
Yeah, when you think about it, and we talked about place earlier, you know, there's a right place to post certain promotions. You know, that's a great place to post them there. You know, and I think it's interesting when it comes to the group dynamic, when it comes to Facebook, because I'll take, for example, Missouri Dairy Goat Association and Wisconsin Dairy Goat Association. Obviously, I don't live in those places, but I feel like I'm kind of a stakeholder to some extent in those. So I see content from both of them.
Right. I do too. Yes. And for me, if the right animal showed up in Wisconsin, I would totally take a road trip and go there. Probably would not take a goat road trip to Idaho. It's a little farther than I would want to. So therefore I'm not part of that group there, but you know, for sure you can market in those groups. If that's something that seems to work out well with what your plan is for marketing your herd.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of opportunities there, but when it comes to group pages, but I think you have to consider place when it comes to that in terms of marketing.
For sure. I would agree.
So next thing here is your personal Facebook page. I know some people in my goat circle that just promote their goats on their personal page, and that's totally fine. You know, that's your prerogative, and I'm not going to judge you, but just remember, you might get some weird people involved in that.
Right. Or, you know, what you said kind of hit me in the heart a little bit, because I remember getting, you know, people laughing, "Oh my gosh, you're that girl with the goats." You know, maybe on your personal family page, you may want to think about the sensitivity of people in your community. Are they going to poke fun at your kids for having goats? And, you know, yeah, they probably know you have them, but maybe they don't know how passionate you are about it. So, you know, maybe think about how that looks on your personal Facebook page. And again, or you may just make people make fun of you for putting udder pictures up there when they have no idea why you're showing them the butt of a goat.
So. Yeah, you're exactly right there. I think, some people do it well. Some people, you know, choose to not do it well. You know, it just depends how much you want to lean into the goats, as I say it there. Obviously, I made a conscious decision to choose to lean into the goats somewhat there. When, if you're friends with me and see some of my content I create on my personal Facebook page, and some of them is funny, some of it's not, some of it's centered around the goats, some of it's not. It just depends on what you want.
You know, I do want to throw out a little caveat here.
Yeah.
Social media is a great forum to get questions answered and to ask questions of other people, but be really sensitive to the pictures that you post. If it's something, disturbing or gross or something that non-goat people are not going to understand in any way, shape, or form, if you're just posting it out there in general, maybe consider just posting to a goat emergency group or a goat vet group or something like that. If you're talking about bodily functions or pictures of goat anatomy that you're asking questions about, just be sensitive to that can be part of marketing too, you know, not putting everything out there for people who don't understand to see those pictures. So
mm-hmm. You are exactly right. Marketing can work in a great way. It can also work in a negative way.
Right.
So yeah, I think that's the one thing as well. And I think the last thing here on Facebook marketing to consider is just telling a story and being able, and Laura, I think you kind of put this in there, telling a story about your goats.
Right. You know, some people do that really good and get you invested in their successes and their happiness. And, you know, tell them about the farm that you live on. You know, if you live on a family farm, I think that's really important. That promotes agriculture in a really positive way and shows people why you keep grandpa's old barn, or, you know, is your herd name named after a family thing? And where did that come from? Let people know your story.
Yeah, I agree with her there. And thinking back to a story that my dad was actually involved with, and it's kind of crazy thinking about him, but he's friends with some random goat people and whatnot. I think he judged the show and they friend requested him and he accepted. And he would always get updates on a goat named Pogo. And he would, and I think it was like a Nubian weather or something like that. But he got so invested in the story of Pogo, and he was telling me and Catherine about it, he would actually open up a group chat and update us about Pogo.
Oh, that's funny.
And at one point, I think it was, you know, maybe a month or two, he's like, I haven't heard about Pogo in a while. I'm kind of concerned.
Oh, wow. Well, but you know that, I mean, that gets people... that gets him in the heart, you know, it gets him involved and gets him wanting to know more. I think that's a cool idea.
I'm wondering about Pogo myself. I'm wondering if he's seen an update.
Okay. You're going to have to let me know now.
Next week, listeners, I will get an update on Pogo and I will tell you guys about it.
Are there some herds, Cameron, that you can think of that just do a really great job of marketing or do a really unique job? And I know I've shouted out Craig a couple times, but
well, Craig does a great job, and I'll be the first one to admit that. You know, he's a great friend of yourself and mine, and so he does a great job of that. And obviously, we talked about Blissberry and whatnot as well. But I want to talk about Provision Farm and Streams of Mercy Dairy Goats. You're like, where the heck did Cameron come up with that one? It was a page that I had found because I had sold La Mancha to them. But they do a great job at meme content creation. And then what they do they do so much memes, and then they brand them as, you know, Provision Farms and Streams of Mercy Dairy Goats. It is so great content for dairy goat people that, like, everybody follows them.
And then people share them. I mean, they're great. And I wish I knew how they did that, because they're funny as all get out. And so true. The stuff that they put up, I'm just like, oh my gosh, these are goat people that I want to buy them a drink or something when I meet them someday, because they're just funny.
Yeah. I've never met them, but we sold some goats to them and had a transport pick them up and whatnot from the national show. But they are good people from my understanding, and they create a lot of good content, and that good content leads to good sales, actually.
Yeah, that is just pretty brilliant and pretty unique too.
Yes. And along those lines of kind of content creation and whatnot and creating, leading to brand recognition, is the Oak Apple Dairy Goats. Have you seen their content?
I have not. No, I'm going to have to look them up.
So if you look at Oak Apple Dairy Goats on Facebook, they do like comic strips of dairy goats. And it's like very nice, like professional, like not professional, like scribbling, but professional, like drawings and whatnot of goats and kind of social commentaries on things and just the life of being a goat breeder. And they have Nigerians and they're in Oregon. It's just very interesting just seeing what they do. And it's very relatable content there, but that content that they create leads to a certain brand recognition, and that brand recognition could lead to sales.
I think I have seen them, because I've looked at them and thought, whoever drew these comics totally knows dairy goats. These are great. Yes, I remember them now that you say that. And to have that kind of talent, I mean, I couldn't do that. Maybe Elizabeth could, but that's just pretty awesome. And make you laugh. I mean, everybody can stand back and look at him.
Yes, I agree with you on that. And I would hope Elizabeth would be able to draw those at some point.
I'll have to ask her. Huh. Maybe she... we'll have to think about that. Yeah. So we had Kate on here earlier as a podcast guest. But it always blows my mind his the giveaway that he does of a dough kit every year around Christmas time.
Yes.
How much interest he gets generated in his farm by doing that. That's just so much fun.
Yes. I think it's you have to like the post and share the post and tell why you would be interested in the goat and whatnot. It's just, it's so interesting because you can attract tens of thousands of people to see your content that might have no interest in your goats and whatnot. It's just very interesting to see how one contest can relate to so many impressions that could lead to sales.
Right. And I bet you that even those people that didn't win the goat, they're looking at his website and trying to figure out how they could get a Cade's Little Farm Nigerian Dwarf on their farm.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I just
think that was that's just a brilliant thought.
I agree, and I wish I would have thought about it.
Yeah, now, you know, people would sign up for it, but it's just, you're just copying what Cade did, so.
Yeah. Exactly, and I'm going to give Cade credit where credit is due, and that's a great promotion there, and a successful strategy that he's used to leverage his position, and not only that, he's got some great dairy goats as well down there. One other successful marketing strategy is Redwood Hills. And you're like, Cameron, why are you pointing out such a giant herd that has, you know, nationally renowned success? But in my opinion, success breeds success. It's crazy. If you ever look at the amount of Facebook likes they have on their posts, there's like 250 plus on every one of them.
Right. And not only do they feature, I mean, from time to time, they will feature certain animals, but they tell stories about what they do there too. So, you know, they talk about the different products that Redwood Hills makes. They talk about their animals, you know, after they've lived a long life and they've shown past national champions who are in retirement. It makes you feel good about them too. I think they do a brilliant job with it.
I think they do I agree with you.
Their marketing just speaks total class the whole way through, mm-hmm. the way they do it. It's just brilliant.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that. I think it's really interesting from them is they talk about the goats and they promote the goats, but then they also promote some of the sustainable farming initiatives that they have as well. They do some stuff with olives. They do some stuff with hops. It's just very interesting and paints a very, very, very pretty story of Redwood Hills as a very regenerative and sustainable farm.
It does. And again, makes you feel good about thinking of bringing one of those animals into your herd. You know, they have beautiful goats. So, you know, it's good all around.
I agree here. And I think the last thing here is... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, on our list, you already mentioned Blissberry, but something that they do that just really touches me, they send out the most beautiful Christmas cards.
You do that too,
I'm sure
though.
They send them out. Well, because I took a page from their book this year. This is the first year I've done that. But, you know, sending Christmas cards with their with some of their special animals and some neat pictures, whether it's just to people that are friends or people that have bought from you in the past, that's kind of a good way to, you know, maybe say a little bit of a thank you, or people that you've bought animals from, you know, as a thank you. So I think you can use holidays as a reason for that. I wish I saw what farm it was, and I'm so sorry I didn't, but somebody had a Valentine's Day promotion today on Facebook where
if you
ordered a kid today, you got $50 off of the sale price on that kid. And I'm like, what a neat thing. Buy your sweetheart a baby goat. Now, what better Valentine would there be than that? So
I'm going to bring that holidays. I'm going to bring that farm up. Cause I just saw it.
You saw March that. Kitchen, yeah. It was really
it. It was the Valley of the Goats. I kind of want to see where they are. Just out of curiosity. Oh, no. Valley of the Goats is Carol and March Kitchen. Carol Dronan and March Kitchen.
Oh,
so.
Well, that was a brilliant marketing idea, ladies. That was very cute.
Yes, I would agree with you on that. So shout out to those two. I also think they are one of our biggest fans and I appreciate everything that Carol and Marge do for the industry, the people, and they're just phenomenal people of themselves.
Yep, and thank you guys for your great ideas for us, because we listen to you. So
yes.
Anything else on marketing, Cameron, for this week?
No, I think there's a great way to do marketing, and there's a less successful way to do marketing. But at the end of the day, it's how you position yourself, not only as goat breeders, but as people as well. And at the end of the day, I think one thing you have to remember is people buy goats from people, not just because of goats. So be a good person, and that will speak dividends on no matter whatever goat that is being purchased ends up placing.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Cameron. That's a good one. Hey, so you've got exciting plans for our podcast for next week.
Yes, we have a guest. I have not confirmed said guest, so I cannot say said guest. I told you I'd get a guest. we're going to get a guest next week, whether it's said guest or someone else. Might be Catherine. No, it's not Catherine. But we'll get a guest. We'll have a guest on next week. So enjoy that, and have a great weekend, everybody. Great week.
Yes. And please find us on Apple Podcasts. And if you feel so inclined, please give us a rating. We'd like to make sure that we're meeting a need for our goat community. We can also be found on Spotify and Google Podcasts and, just about any platform that you want to listen to. So we really appreciate you, and have a great week, and we will see you next week. Thanks, Cameron, for being part of it again.
Thank you, Laura.